Good morning, everybody. Greetings to everybody over on the south side this morning. What a joy to be with all of you. Aren't you grateful for another day? And if you forgot, it comes as a gift, a very kind gift, and so we don't take it for granted. This is the day the Lord has made. And His purpose is that we would find joy in the midst of the reality of our lives. So may God help us. May God help us to see Him in the small things this day. Well, we come to week number 3 in our series as we are this summer are studying the book of Daniel together. So we jump in one more time. What do you do when life doesn't turn out the way that you had planned? There was a little book that became a surprise national bestseller entitled The Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook. And it was a manual on survival skills. Quite hilarious, much of it. But it was experts who were interviewed in various fields. So if you wanted to learn how to, if you jump from a plane and your parachute doesn't open, what do you do if there's a chance to survive? How do you escape from quicksand? How to jump from a building into a dumpster. Come in handy. How to perform an emergency tracheotomy. I would run away from you, I'm telling you. What do you do if you are confronted with a charging bull? And what do you do if you, you're out on a hike, you're somewhere, and you encounter a mountain lion? Just a few. These survival skill tips. The premise of the book was just simply that you never know what's going to come around the corner. You never know when you will be called on and your actions will be a matter of life and death. And we're going to look today at another worst case scenario and see how average people like you and I might respond. Because you just don't know what kind of curveballs that life will throw, but be assured, they're on their way. And when your name is called, what do you do? And that, in fact, that's why the scriptures, the Bible, was written. So, provided for you in your bulletin and on the side screens will be our text this morning from Daniel 3. So, if you would be so kind as to follow along as I read. King Nebuchadnezzar made a gold statue 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then he sent messages to the high officers, officials, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the provincial officials to come to the dedication of the statue that he had set up. So all these officials came and stood before the statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald shouted out, "People of all races and nations and languages, now listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." So at the sound of the musical instruments, all the people, whatever their race, whatever their nation, whatever their language, they bowed to the ground and worshiped the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Now some of the astrologers went to the king, and they're going to rat out on some of the Jews. You want to take these guys out in the back alley and give them a good pounding. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "Long live the king. You issued a decree requiring all the people to bow down and worship the gold statue. When they hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments. That decree also states that those who refuse to obey must be thrown into the burning furnace. But there are some Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, whom you have put in charge of the province of Babylon, but they pay no attention to you, your majesty." Can you just, this is thick. These guys are laying it on. "And they refuse to serve your gods and do not worship the gold statue that you have set up." Nebuchadnezzar, in true form, flies into a rage. And he ordered that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him. When they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true? Could it be possible, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or to worship the gold statue that I have set up? I will give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I have made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then tell me, what god will rescue you from my power?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it very clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue that you have set up." Hip, hip, hooray for Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Man, these guys, wow. Well, there is a great celebration that's going to center around a dedication for the image that Nebuchadnezzar has created and set up. Now, last week when we ended Daniel chapter 2, it seemed as though Nebuchadnezzar is right on the verge of becoming a follower of the God of Israel. Do you remember? Nebuchadnezzar has a dream that troubles him. And Nebuchadnezzar, he's a god. He thinks he's a god. He has insomnia. He's sleepless in Babylon. And he calls in his chief advisors, and he says, "You're to not only tell me the dream, but you're to tell me what it means." And remember, they said, "Oh, we would love to help you, but we can't." And Nebuchadnezzar, the immature punk that he is, he just says, "You're all dead. I'm going to kill you all." So in the midst of this death order, Daniel comes on the scene. And remember, he tells Nebuchadnezzar his dream, and he interprets it for him. And it was a dream about power. "Nebuchadnezzar, there is a statue, and you are the head of gold, but it's all built on feet of clay. This thing is coming down. The God of heaven is on his way." And it was all a prophecy about what would come, the rock that was not cut by human hands, the living stone, is on its way. and judgment is coming, Nebuchadnezzar, and you better get right with God. And remember Nebuchadnezzar's response to Daniel? He says, your God is Lord of all and King of kings. But something happens in between chapter 2 and chapter 3. Because Nebuchadnezzar has a short, selective memory. He sees what he wants. He hears what he wants. And he remembers what he wants. He forgets quickly about the God of heaven and remembers vividly that he's the head of gold on this statue. And in his very immature, arrogant way, Nebuchadnezzar thinks that his reign will continue to stand, that he is not subject, he is not vulnerable at all. Now, Nebuchadnezzar rules over a society of captured people. So there are different languages and different customs and different systems of belief. This is multiculturalism at its best. But he decides that what all of these diverse people need is some unity, something that will hold them together. So he has a brainstorm. The best way to create unity is to form a common religion, and every religion has at its center an object. So he's going to build himself some god. Now, what god? It's unclear. It's vague, and I think it's vague on purpose, because this is really a story not about religion, faith, and unity. It's a story about politics and power. It's a story about Nebuchadnezzar, because he's going to set out to create some oneness, and he will stop at no expense to try and motivate people to want to join in to his unity project. So he's going to get the finest event planners in his kingdom. He's going to call them all together. And there's going to be, at this dedication, there's going to be art, and there's going to be beauty, and there's going to be performance, and there's going to be music, there's going to be pomp, there's going to be circumstance. And if that's not enough, at the center of it all will be this 90-foot tall statue, golden statue, that really brings out the wow factor. And if all of this is not enough, Nebuchadnezzar is going to add a little motivational inspiration to get you to bow down. He adds, oh, and by the way, failure to bow down will result in you being thrown in the furnace and burned alive. Not everybody knew the furnace. So picture this moment. As far as the eye can see, there are people. And you know how it is. Just there is sort of a buzz and excitement to be in a place where there is a great crowd. There is this vast sea of people. Every kind, every tribe, and every tongue. They have never seen anything like this, never been a part of anything like this before. It might help if you would think of something like the opening ceremonies at the Olympics. But this is all really about Nebuchadnezzar. Now, the writer makes it very clear they are all motivated to hit the dirt at the right cue. They are choosing to join in on Nebuchadnezzar's unity project. And at the right cue, they are all ready to bow. So here is this mass sea of people bowing at the right time. But then suddenly, through the crowd, there is this small but growing ripple of noise. It's sort of like if you're at an event and they do the wave. You know how it starts? There's two or three, and then four and five. And by the time, well, it's sort of that effect. And suddenly, they're all bowing to the ground, but their heads are raised, not looking at the statue that Nebuchadnezzar has set up, but at three high-ranking officials who are still standing, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Now, everyone else is on the ground, and these three are so conspicuous in their standing. They have refused to bend their knees and to bow their heads. And there's this one little comment. I'm not even sure why the writer put it in there, but I love that he did. There is a group of their colleagues who clearly, out of a sense of jealousy, are going to seize this moment and rat them out. They're going to use this as an opportunity for personal advancement. Their own jealousy is seen. Now, it doesn't require a genius, if you've been here the last 2 weeks, to consider how Nebuchadnezzar will respond to all this. He is outraged. One more time. Every time you read about Nebuchadnezzar, he's outraged because he is so small in character. He calls them in before them and he tells them something, and then he's going to ask them a question. He tells them, "You guys are messing with the wrong boy. Don't you understand? Did you not hear me clearly?" And then he's going to ask them this question: "Who do you think is going to deliver you from my fury and my furnace?" Now, this is a rhetorical question. Nebuchadnezzar is not looking for a response. He's not asking for more information from them. He is just doing what he always does. He is powering up with threats. "You better shape up because you are in my hands. Obey me or else." But to his surprise, they think he's really asking them a question. "Who can rescue you from my fury and from my furnace?" And they're going to answer his question. The correct answer, O Nebuchadnezzar, is our God. Our God is more than able. Our God is able. So this morning, let's just sit in that for 1 second, all right? Our God is able. Our God is more than able. I don't know what it is that you face this morning, but I want you to hear this day that our God is able. We simply cannot spend enough time. Well, we do it every week as we gather together and hear the scriptures read and taught. Story after story, from one beginning to the end, our God is able. I thought, you know, it would be fun if we took the rest of our summer weekends together and we just became living testimonies of this one truth, that our God is able. And we just began and we passed the mic and we just would tell stories. We would tell stories of the most fractured relationships that our God helped put back together, because our God is able. We would tell stories about broken bodies that have been healed. We would tell stories about those who found themselves enslaved by the power of addiction and they are walking free. We would tell stories about the darkest of sins that have been forgiven. We would tell stories about how our God is able to provide. We would talk about how our God has softened the hardest of hearts, how our God has brought rebel, prodigal sons and daughters back home. Because you and I are living testimonies to this one truth: the God we serve is able. Can you say amen to that this morning? But they don't just stop there. They don't just answer the question that Nebuchadnezzar wasn't really asking. They are now going to express a level of commitment that is deeper than anywhere else in all the Bible. Yes, They clearly heard the king's edict. All must bow to the god of gold or else. And so they're going to huddle up as a little community. You got to love this. Remember we said in week one, if you're going to survive in Babylon, if you're going to thrive in Babylon, you better build yourself a little band of brothers and sisters who will walk this Babylon kind of life out with you. And so they gathered together. Can you just hear them encourage each other? Can you imagine the kind of prayers that they prayed over each other? Can you hear them as they decided together that they would resist together? It's absolutely unthinkable, Nebuchadnezzar, that we would ever bend our knee except to the God of heaven. You know that after chapter 2 and Nebuchadnezzar's declaration about the God of Israel, that they would have prayed. They would have prayed that Nebuchadnezzar would follow through on his statement and that he would come to faith in the one true God. But that prayer was not answered. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't even come close to repenting. And you know that they would have prayed that Nebuchadnezzar would come to his senses and not enforce this edict. But that prayer wasn't answered. They would have prayed that, when everyone else bows and we are standing, Lord, let there be some kind of holy shield that makes us unseen. And that prayer wasn't answered. And they prayed that when they were still standing, that if people saw them, that no one would tell. And people saw and they told. Not one of their prayers is answered. And they are in a worst case scenario possible. And then comes the greatest statement of commitment in the entire Bible ever uttered. Our God can rescue us. Just like when he rescued Israel from Pharaoh's pursuing armies, our God can rescue. Just like when he brought down the walls of Jericho, our God can rescue. Just like when he dropped Goliath with a stone, our God is able. He has lost none of his strength. But Nebuchadnezzar, read our lips and be very clear that our minds are made up. We will not bow to your statue of gold. We will, if necessary, march to our death, worshiping the only God who is worthy of our lives. So I'm here this morning to ask all of us, our God is able, but what about when he doesn't? What if he doesn't? Our church has a little statement of purpose, and we will frequently read it to you, make mention of it. But it just says one thing, that every person who finds themselves a part of the community of CA, we are leading you to one destination, and that is complete commitment to Jesus Christ alone. And if you are a part of this church, if you want another mission statement, lots of other churches, but not this one, we will call every person, both those who believe and those who don't, to a total and complete commitment to Jesus Christ. What about when God doesn't? Job is a story of intense suffering. And yet he refused to dishonor God. No relief. There's no explanation. Day after day, misery and despair that is finally given voice by his wife, who says, enough, enough. Just curse God and die. And then these words from Job himself, if he slay me, yet will I trust him. Yet will I worship him. There's a young woman named Esther, and she decided that she would confront a tyrant king on behalf of the people of Israel. But knowing that that decision for her to approach the king without being summoned meant that was death. But Esther said these words, "If I perish, I perish." I was thinking as I wrote these notes of my father-in-law who died a couple years ago. But his wife, my mom-in-law, Arlene's mom, died at 60 of breast cancer. And she died a tortured death, and they served as local church pastors for many, many years. And I remember Harry, he prayed. He prayed, and he would just say, "God is able. Who's going to rescue you, Harry? Our God can rescue." And he would have given up everything to have had that one prayer answered. And I watched him. I watched him for several, honestly, tortured years. My mom-in-law died. But I watched him just say, "If I have to give her up, Lord, I will. But I will honor you to my very last breath, even if he doesn't." You know, so many prayers that we pray. God, if you would answer this one prayer, if you would come through on this one dream, Lord, I'm all yours. I'm all in. I'll serve you with all my life. I'm here to ask you, will your commitment be complete even if he doesn't? Tommy, would you come? Our God is able, but what if he doesn't? I don't know what those words might mean for you, but I only know for me that far too often the truth about me is that if my day goes well and all the news is up and circumstances are positive, man, I am so much fun to be around. I am full of commitment, joy, and generosity. But you let me even feel from a distance the heat of the furnace, and I so easily bend my knee to gods called self-interest and self-pity. Because ultimately the name of the gold statue that I am most tempted to bow to is called me. Now this one thing is true. You will pick and you will bow to something with complete commitment. Jesus found himself in a garden. And it was there in a garden that he prayed a prayer, a courageous prayer. And remember, Jesus prayed. He said, "Our God is able, my Father is able, but even if he doesn't, Lord, would you let this cup pass from me? Could you please spare me of this?" And then Jesus said, "Even if he doesn't, I will drink this cup to the last drop." So I'm asking all of us again to decide, even if he doesn't, we will follow, we will worship, and we will serve him completely. So, have you been bending your knee in any wrong directions? Even if you don't, Lord, I'm your man. I'm your woman. Our vow to you, O God, is that if you are abundantly pouring out blessing, or when dreams don't go the way that we want, when life doesn't go as we planned, we say it clearly that you are our God and you alone will we worship with absolute and complete commitment. Let's sing together.